right, everybody, welcome to the premier crossover event. That's right, we got the Cleveland Sports Zone going on, and I today am not doing this solo, thank God, because honestly, I'm getting a little bored doing this all by myself in a bedroom at my apartment. Today, I am on location with Scott Kennison, and Scott, what is the name of your podcast for everybody out there?
Sports Society and Spirits. You can find it at ravinglunaticmedia.com. And you can find a couple other podcasts there too. Quick Rants, and I've got a science fiction podcast called Sci-Fi Malady. So there's a lot of stuff going on over there at ravinglunaticmedia.com.
There is actually a whole lot of stuff going on over there. For those of you who, you know, you missed me when I took that 5-month hiatus, Scott was in the lab cooking up some great stuff, so you definitely need to head over to ravinglunaticmedia.com and check it out. But today, we are doing this premier crossover event where, like, the CW, like Arrow, Flash, and all those shows. Maybe without the Supergirl and no TJ Hill, unfortunately. He couldn't make it here tonight, but we're going to mix it up for you because lately I've just been doing the Brown Zone, just spending 45 minutes talking about the Browns, but we've got a lot going on. We've got Cleveland Browns draft talk happening all over. We even heard some Hugh Jackson should get fired if he only wins one or two games all week long on local radio, but you know, we're not going to get into that. I don't need to give any credence to that. But so we're going to talk Browns draft. We are going to talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are currently playing the Atlanta Hawks, because we are recording this on a Friday night. Then a little bit later, we're gonna flip things over to some Scott's world. And Scott, tell us what we're going to talk about over there.
And we're going to talk about 59 Tomahawk missiles fired at Syria. Donald Trump reversing course on his statement that this is about America first, we shouldn't get involved in Syria, and taking, even though I'm not a fan of the Donald in 45, taking the appropriate and the correct action to go do something about the atrocities going on in Syria, unlike what Obama did when he showed the whole world that he's a coward and didn't do anything when Syria crossed his so-called red line and then began emboldening Putin, who then led a resurgent Russia on the world stage. So we'll get into that later on. Bob, for the Sports Society and Spirits audience, we plugged your show, your website before, but where can they find your stuff?
You can find the Cleveland Sports Zone podcast pretty much anywhere. I primarily publish out of SoundCloud, but it goes out to Stitcher, FM Player or Player FM, whatever it is, Podbean, iTunes, basically anywhere that you can find a podcast, it's on there. Oh, and TuneIn, definitely on TuneIn. We put it in there too. So you can find it anywhere or just type in clevelandsportszone.com and go there and listen to it on the website.
And I will say that for the other stuff that the other podcast talked about, you can find those primarily Stitcher, iTunes, but I know they're out there at a few other places too that have picked them up. So without just shamelessly plugging our own websites here any further, why don't we get into the disaster that was the Cleveland Browns and hopefully isn't the Cleveland Browns next year.
So for those of you listening in from Scott's podcast, on my last show, I primarily talked about the Cleveland Browns offense and talking about draft needs there, dove a little bit into something that I thought on the tight end side of things that they would be exploring potentially drafting a tight end in this class. Gary Barnage is getting up there in age, coming off a down year. And, you know, making $3.3 million next year with a $1 million roster bonus going into that final year of the contract. So I wanted to flip the script and do the same thing with the defensive side of the ball, because this draft is very, very deep at defensive back. It's got some love at linebacker. There's some very, very good players in this draft, and the Browns have a lot of draft picks. I mean, we've heard scouts out there talking about guys that are going to be drafted into the third round that could have been fringe first rounders in other years, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So for a team like the Cleveland Browns, who last year, you know, they came in at 21st against the pass, 31st overall defense, 31st against the rush, 30th in points given up. You know, everybody wants to focus right now on the quarterback position because it's a foregone conclusion that Myles Garrett's going to go number one overall. But the Browns do have a lot of work to do on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, opposing offenses carved the team up all year last year.
So let's be fair here. We're not talking about a bad defense. We're talking about a historically bad defense. This was one of the worst defenses in the history of the NFL, and it was only because the San Diego Chargers didn't give a damn about a game on Christmas Eve and didn't want to be in Cleveland on Christmas Eve that the Browns escaped out of there without going 0-16. And us having the conversation of what was the worst 0-16 team ever, the Detroit Lions or the Cleveland Browns. That was a terrible defense. And the reason that team was 1-15 was because of how bad that defense was. You need far more help on defense than you do on offense at this point, even though you need help on offense. If you don't address this defense, you're not going anywhere next year. You got to be able to stop the other team from scoring. That's Pat Shermer-esque right there, but you can't right now. So there's no way that they can go through this draft and not heavily address the problems on this defense.
And the first thing that they did to try to address those problems is they axed everybody's lovable loser, Ray Horton, who, you know, I tried to give him a second chance. I thought maybe he could come back and have unfinished business, you know, running with his 3-4 defensive scheme and really get things going this time around. But as the season went on, I just looked more and more into it. And everywhere that he was a defensive coordinator, with the exception of 1 year in Arizona, it was just high points put up against him all the time. So out is Horton, and in comes, honestly, a guy that, and I hate this phrase sometimes, but I have to use it, that I personally would run through a wall for, and that's Greg Williams. Greg, who, as many people know, was part of, if not the orchestrator of, Bountygate in New Orleans. But he's a guy that gets the most out of his players, whether they're undrafted guys or first-round guys. He runs multiple schemes. On his opening presser, when somebody kept asking about 3-4 or 4-3, he just laughed at them and said something about that he has 43 different fronts that he uses or some number like that. So Williams is a guy that is going to get the most out of his defense. And that's a good thing because the Browns have a lot of youth on their defense. And when you look at with how many draft picks they have, it looks like they're only going to get younger, especially with the addition of Myles Garrett, who's consensus number one overall pick right now. I mean, basically, the card is all but in there. And he was recently quoted at an event saying that he can't wait to coach Myles Garrett. So this is somebody that Greg Williams is already looking at and someone that the Browns should be really excited about. But when I think about Greg Williams, I keep going back to Bountygate. So I had to go back and do a little bit of investigating on the defense, you know, that he really runs. And I found a video. And Scott, I was telling you about this a little bit before we came on here. But I found a video back from when he was with the Rams and he was getting interviewed by a member of their media. And he was going in and breaking down the 4-3 base on his defense. And there were a couple items, and I'd really love to get your opinion on it, that were glaring to me when he talked about it. So when he talked about it, the first thing he said, you know, he needs the big guy on the defensive line that's going to line up over the center and go to work there. And obviously that seems like Danny Shelton, especially after his resurgence last year.
Danny Shelton had a good second half of the year. If he can build on that, Danny Shelton absolutely can fit that mold to be the guy taking up space in the middle of the line, move the line in, cave it in, and make people account for him. Danny Shelton fits that mold.
So then next to them on the line, he mentioned a guy who would fill the three tech role. Obviously, with the Rams, they had somebody by the name of Aaron Donald. He's kind of good. He plays the defensive line position as good as anybody does in the league. I mean, hey, the Browns didn't draft him; they took Justin Gilbert. But so right
hard
now,
sleeper.
He's a very hard sleeper. So with a guy like Donald in that hole, and I get that every team isn't the same, and you're going to run multiple fronts, and you're going to throw different players out there. But with a guy like Donald as his gold standard for what he wants, I look at this defensive line, and I see Jamie Meter. I see coming back from his injuries, torn pectoral, Bryant. You know, and I see a bunch of crap that
you don't
plays
have
next to Shelton.
You don't have it. You didn't go get it in free agency. So the only thing I can conclude is that you're going to go looking for that somewhere in this draft. Because Jamie Meter is a fine depth player on the defensive line in the league. He might even be a serviceable nose tackle somewhere if you're asking him to slam into the center of the line and take up space and take up two blockers and make people move him off a spot. He's not your dynamic 4-3 defensive tackle. He's okay in a team, but if you're looking for Jamie Meter to anchor your line or to give you an ability to run some dynamic fronts out there at a defensive tackle, I just don't think that's the guy you're looking for.
No, and that's why when you go back and you watch Aaron Donald, and you're not going to get a player as dynamic as Aaron Donald.
And Dez Bryant is an end. He's best as a pass rushing end. That's when he was best when he was here, when they were letting him rush off the edge, not when they were making him, you know, you never really had him playing nose tackle here, did you?
No, and it's when he was
to convert him to defensive tackle. he's going to be best off the edge playing hand-down defensive end. That's where he's going to be best.
Yeah. So when you think about Aaron Donald for a second, you think the two things that stand out to me are speed and athleticism. And when I say speed, I'm not talking he runs a 4.440. I'm just talking his speed of mental processing, what's going on at the line of scrimmage. He knows where the offensive linemen are going to go before they go. So when you think about that, I think of a highly intelligent guy on the inside of the line. Jonathan Allen almost stands out to me. He's a guy that can move around on the defensive line. He moved around at Alabama. Smart kid, but he's got the arthritis in his shoulders issues. So I don't know if that's a guy that the Browns would take at 12 if he slides down there. But he's definitely somebody that, and I'm sure somebody out there is going to tell me I'm a moron for saying Jonathan Allen could slide on the inside. They probably view him as a 4-3 end or something. But I see an intelligent player that moved around a lot in college, and maybe he's that guy. But, you know, from there, Greg Williams in that video, he went on to describe the rest of the defense. And the one that really, really stood out to me, and once again, I know that teams run the nickel 55% of the time or more, and I understand that you're going to be moving around. There's not always going to be three linebackers out there. But when he described his 4-3 base, something really, really, really stood out to me. He was talking about the Mike linebacker position. And he was, at the time, for the Rams, it was former Buckeye, James Laurinaitis. And he said, and he was very strong when he said this, he said, that middle linebacker needs to be an extension of me on the field. So to me, that means that the middle linebacker for his defense is the quarterback of his defense. It's got to be the smartest guy on the field, the most athletic guy in his linebacking unit. It's got to be the guy that isn't afraid to go head first into a running back coming out of the backfield, guy that's going to stop the run, but somebody that's going to be overly athletic, smart, a leader. I mean, the gold standard is Luke Kuechly of Carolina. Like, you need a Luke Kuechly in the middle of that defense. The Rams had Laurinaitis, then they went on, and I believe they had Mark Barron out there, and they moved somebody else. I forget who it was. But they've moved so many people, and they were just all smart and super athletic linebackers. So to me, when I look at the Browns defense right now and who they have on the roster, at the inside linebacker position, your two starters in the 3-4 were DeMario Davis and Christian Kirksey. After that, you have Tank Carter, you've got Alexander. You don't really have somebody that just stands out as that number one athletic quarterback of the defense guy that on the roster of your current inside linebackers. So I get confused here because you just paid Jamie Collins all this money. He's not your Mike linebacker. That's not what he does best. You have a myriad of other guys, Joe Schobert, Nate Orchard, those guys, nobody's your middle linebacker in a 4-3 defense. So what do you do there? And what stands out to me is you have guys like Reuben Foster, Raekwon McMillan, and other linebackers in this draft class that could be there at 12 with Foster, should be there at 33 with Raekwon McMillan. But what do you do there, Scott? Like, everybody wants to talk about it's got to go Myles Garrett one, obviously, then a quarterback, then a defensive back. But if you have a new coach coming in saying that he needs an absolute extension of him in the middle of his defense, and you don't have that, that's almost got to become a priority.
At some point, you're going to look to address that, although I'm not sure that it is ultimately your priority, because I think if you were looking at places where the play was okay, your inside linebacker play may be where you might feel that you were okay. And so while you're looking to upgrade it, I don't think it's a fire that you're going to upgrade. It would make sense if the Browns drafted a middle linebacker to play that Mike linebacker spot in the 4-3, because I agree with you, you don't necessarily have the dominant guy that you want to play that spot, but you have guys that can play that spot. And there are other positions on this defense that are bleeding a little more. I know Joe Hayden is very much hated, but aside from Joe Hayden, I don't know who you have playing cornerback on this team right now that you feel very good about. I know Brian Body Calhoun, made a couple plays last year, but I really don't think that he's metamorphosizing into the next coming of a number one or number two cornerback out there in the NFL that you can hang your hat on. You have problems at safety,
and
you
I love questions. Calhoun.
Hey, look, he battled. He played hard on Pat Shurmur again. He battled, and he played hard. And, you know, he tried to stop the other team from scoring, and that's what you got to do to win. But, I could see it. But the Browns are definitely drafting quarterback at 12, in my opinion. I know we're talking about defensive needs, but it just – there's a story being told here with the Browns. They spent a lot of money on an offensive line, a lot of money on that, keeping Greco, adding pieces. And they did that – I think, because they're going to invest in a quarterback. They also traded for Brock Osweiler's $17 million contract. Is it 17, 18?
16.
16. His $16 million contract to acquire a second-round pick. And they took on all of that, I believe, so that they could use that, use those assets to move up and get either Deshaun Watson or Trubisky, whoever is sitting there at 3, 4, 5. They want to be able to take 12 and their other assets and move as far up in this draft as they need to, I think, to go get a quarterback. Because nothing they've done addressed that position. And if you think Cody Kessler's an NFL quarterback, I'm going to tell you right now, you're delusional. The kid doesn't have the arm to play quarterback in the NFL. I wish he did, because I think he has the heart that Cleveland loves to play quarterback. I even think he has the mental ability to play quarterback in the NFL. And I think he's got the accuracy and he's got the temperament to play the position. But he doesn't have the physical abilities, and he just doesn't have it. And you look at it, and he screams, nice backup quarterback. And he'll probably have a career holding a clipboard for a long time. I'd love to see Cody succeed, but that's not happening. And there's no one else on this roster that is your quarterback. And Brock Osweiler, we know, is terrible. So unless the Browns are completely punting 2017, they have to be looking to do something at quarterback. And I don't see how you're sitting there thinking, I can stick around here till 12 and get a quarterback. So I think that while, yes, it would make sense to take someone on the line at 12, or it would make sense to take a linebacker at 12, I don't think they're going defense at 12. I think it might be the only position in the first three or four rounds that they don't go defense. But I think they're moving up, and they're going to make a play for one of those two quarterbacks. I just don't know which one it is.
Oh, and that's a great point. Kessler, I still go back to last year when they drafted him, and I was like,
instead of Dak Prescott?
Well, Dak is Dak. There's maybe one person in the entire Twitterverse that thought Dak Prescott, and it wasn't even Dak Prescott's family. There's one person in the entire Twitterverse that thought Dak Prescott was going to be good, and he's sitting across the table from me right now. Everybody else with Dak Prescott had a ton of issues, and they were solved by going behind the best offensive line and being able to turn around and hand the ball to the best running back that's come out of the draft in the last 10 years. And that
nailed that one too.
And that breaks my heart.
Because I'm done patting my back now.
Right. I mean, yeah. So, you know, the Dak Prescott thing obviously is there, but I think,
I'll agree with you. Just a quick aside. I'll agree with you. We really can't be absolutely certain what Dak Prescott is or isn't, because he fell into the greatest situation you could fall into as a starting quarterback in the NFL.
So let's remove Dak from the equation. I said this last year, and I'm standing to it, that when the New England Patriots took Jacoby Brissett, I thought to myself, shit, there goes the guy that Hugh Jackson really, really likes. And I was a big Jacoby Brissett guy all year long. I said he needed to be groomed. He needed that time behind somebody. So with the RG3 signing combined with that, even though RG3, you know, flamed out, obviously, but he was a guy that you'd sit behind somebody and groom. He had the big physical tools, smart kid leader, could read a defense. He just had a few things that he needed to clean up and some time for polish. So when the Patriots moved up and they took him, I think the Browns front office, this was one, you know, first time front office for a lot of them with Sashi and everybody. I think that was one of their overreaction points in the draft, and they'll never admit it. And I think Hugh Jackson came out and said, trust me, guys, because Hugh's like, all right, I'm going to put this one on my shoulders. This is my team. I'm going to take the L on Cody Kessler, and everybody can criticize me because I can take it. I don't think Cody Kessler was his pick, and I know we talked about it last year. When Hugh Jackson came to the combine this year and was talking about a quarterback meeting his threshold, and he strongly said that quarterback's got to be 6'2". And then you go back and you rewind and you go, wait, Cody Kessler was 6'1".
So very, very, last very year careful he took here. The L, someone we know is getting very angry talking about 6'2", 6'1" threshold, but the numbers bear it out.
It's not even
the numbers really bear that threshold out. There's very little success. I'll say this again. There's someone getting enraged right now listening. I know who he is. But if you go back through the history of the NFL, you will find very few quarterbacks shorter than 6'2" who were successful, which is why I was very happy when Mitch Trubisky measured out at 6'2" instead of what the rumor going around that he was shorter than 6'2" for a bit.
Yeah, for those of you out there listening, I'm not downing short quarterbacks the way Scott did. My point is just that Hugh Jackson came out a year after trying to take the L on Cody Kessler and said my threshold is 6-2. So that's what makes me feel like the front office overreacted and said, all right, Jacoby Brissett was Hugh's guy and we didn't get him. The Patriots just drafted him. We got to get our next best quarterback on the board, and they took Cody. So going back, all right, we're going to derail it completely off the defensive draft needs, but real quick, I want to put this out there. So I pulled up WalterFootball.com, who the analysis isn't always the greatest, but they do have a really good prospect team visit list. And the only inside linebacker that the Browns have visited with is Ben Bulware of Clemson. The one that belittled putting fingers in people's butts on the field, that Ben Bulware, who is projected as a 7th round undrafted guy, is the only inside linebacker that they have them currently tracked as meeting with. Not Reuben Foster, not Raekwon McMillan, not any of those guys. Ben Bulware. So that could go along with your line of thinking here, that they may not look to address the linebacker position in the middle of that defense early on, but I still see it as a glaring hole that you don't have that extension of Greg Williams guy. The way that the Mike linebacker is described by everybody else. Now, maybe that's because they are going to go to different fronts and only have two linebackers out there more often, and then you don't really have that true Mike out there. But it's still a concern from me. Well, but you got me derailed off defense.
Here's
man.
The other thing. We'll go back to the defense here.
I don't know if I really
Greg
want
Williams,
to.
Greg Williams definitely may want his disruptive nose tackle that can play the zero technique. And then he may want the guy who can line up. We were talking about Jamie Meter or Dez Bryant. And he may want a dominant Mike linebacker who's an extension of himself out there. Odds are you're not getting all three of those this year. So if you're the Browns and you're looking at trying to make your team better this year, realizing that legitimately it's 2019, 2020 before this team is looking to win 8 games. Sorry if everyone now just wants to come after me with pitchforks and torches. But the Browns aren't winning 8 games until 2019 or 2020. If you think that's happening this year, you're crazy, okay? Because it's not. Tom Brady can come here, and he's not winning 8 games with this team next year. There's too many holes to fill in one draft, no matter how many picks you have. Greg Williams has to make a choice. And if Greg Williams is getting Myles Garrett, then you've got to sit there and say, okay, how much is that going to help? And then you got Shelton fitting the piece of your defense. Then we can try to get you what you're looking for defensively at 33. But you're going to have to work with me here a bit, and we're going to give you the first overall pick. You're going to have to punt 12 away because we think that we may have two guys who could be the quarterback of the future on this team by the time we get to said 2019 where we can win some games. And we've got the resources to go get them. I can't see them acquiring that second pick for Brock Osweiler to take a defensive player at 12. The only way I see that happening is if they try to move back up to 3 or 4, and they can't make the deal happen. And then Trubisky's gone and Watson's gone. And if they took Kaiser at 12, that's where I believe I would throw my TV through a wall.
That's where I was just about to get to.
And if they did that, that's where, the guy reminds me, you thought Tim Couch locked on to wide receivers. I don't know if I saw Kaiser get to a second read at all last year one time.
All right. Well, since you went that route, I was going to ask you what's your ideal scenario at 12. Not trade up, nothing, like if you were sitting at 12. But let's start with, we had this question come in from Twitter from Stephen Thomas. What's the one position / guy the Browns could draft at 12 that would make you throw your TV through a wall? You just said DeShone Kizer.
Or Mahomes.
Or Mahomes. So for those of you out there that need a little context on Mahomes, before we started recording the podcast, Scott turned on the Baylor game. Because we were talking about it, and I said, I watched the Kansas State game a few weeks ago, and I can't turn into a full Mahomie like some of these people out here on Twitter, because he just does things that drive me crazy. So I understand all of the arm strength and the beautiful throws here and there and the size, the athleticism, and the upside.
He throws a great 9.
And I get behind all of those things, and it's all great with right development, but I just see too many glaring issues that I can't trade up for him. I can't use 12 and potentially say my sweet spot has always been the Tennessee Titans at 5. I can't use the 12 pick, a second rounder this year and potentially a second rounder next year, which is likely the cost to go up there and get it for a guy that's Mahomes that is a project. And the reason being, to add a little more context to this, the Orange and Brown Report, our good friends over there, had a report this week, or in their musings of their Rumor Central. I don't want to call it a report because they don't like it when you do that. In their musings in their Rumor Central, because they're very connected, from Lane Adkins. And he was talking about the quarterback position with some direct quotes from his sources within the Browns organization. And one of the comments that they made, and it was a fantastic read. If you're a subscriber of the Orange and Brown Report, head over to Rumor Central. If you're not a subscriber, you need to become one. It's awesome. But
I second that. Follow Jared, follow Lane, follow all the guys over to the Orange and Brown Report. It's an excellent local organization with some connections into Berea, connected through Scott.com nationally. They know the Browns. They've been here a while. You can trust what they're saying.
So what the article said, or the rumor in the Rumor Central said, was that Mahomes required special attention. To me, a guy that requires special attention is not somebody that, when you've been very, very high on the number 12 overall pick and talking about how much you value it, that you take there. And it's definitely not somebody that you trade up from 12 for and use multiple assets on. To me, a guy that deserves special attention, in the words of this of Lane's source, is someone that, if you're sitting there at 33, and we talked about this before, you're sitting there at 33 and it's pick 21, 22, 23, and Mahomes is still there, which a lot of people think that he won't be. I also agree. I don't think he will, because I think somebody is going to reach for a quarterback that we're not even thinking of right now. And then you go, if you're the Browns, all right, we're at 33. What would it cost to go from 33 to 23? Is that 33 plus our second rounder this year? Is that 33 plus one of the future seconds that we have next year? All right, we're okay with that cost because we think this guy could be our quarterback of the future, but we're taking him at the position. And I know everybody will rip their hair out if it's at 22 again, so we have another 22 like Brady Quinn,
Brandon Reed, and Johnny Manziel. Never drafting a quarterback at 22 again.
But so I think that a Mahomes and a Kaiser even are guys that the situation has to be right for the Browns. I don't think that you will move up from 12 or even take them at 12, honestly. And I know that's probably going to make a lot of people mad out there, but I'm just going, and maybe I'm reading too much into the quote. But the special attention thing kind of really like got to me. And before the special attention thing, I felt that he was somebody because they brought him in for a second visit this week, and I thought he was somebody that they could take at 12 or they could trade up for. But after reading that little quote and then just going back, you know, special attention, it's drilling into my brain.
I don't want either of them in the first two rounds. And I'm going to tell you why. This simple. Let me simplify everything with Mahomes. It should take you 15 seconds of watching him to realize that he does not throw a football correctly the way that an NFL quarterback is supposed to throw a football. He's throwing off his back foot. He's throwing sidearm. He's throwing halfway underhand. A lot of his passes that have to be on target and accurate are not, and they're behind the wide receiver. His best throws are a 9 route. I'm not going to say he's Johnny Manziel, but Bob and I agree here with the Johnny Manziel red flags. So, like I said with Johnny Manziel,
not cocaine red flags.
If your highlight reel, is running a Tarkenton roll and heaving up a jump ball to Mike Evans, that might not work in the NFL. If your highlight reel in college is that you throw a great fly route and your wide receiver happened to have beat the defender because he's not that good in college, and it's the Big 12 where they don't play defense, and he catches an underthrown ball, that might not work in the NFL either against good defensive backs. Am I saying that Mahomes, as I think I told Bob, I said, if you can teach this kid mechanics, you might have an NFL quarterback, because the mental part of the game is there. He's intuitive. The game comes to him naturally. He's not thinking it out, grinding it out like Brandon Whedon, where you can see the hamster almost falling off the wheel trying to power his brain. But Mahomes, just it's natural. He knows where he's going to go with the ball. The problem is he throws the ball like no one ever taught him properly how to throw a football. Do you want to take a guy at 12 who doesn't know how to throw a football? He's going to play quarterback in the NFL, and he doesn't know how to throw a football the way an NFL quarterback should throw a football. I watched an entire game. I didn't see him throw one pass fundamentally correct. As Bob said, we saw him use 14 different arm angles. And, oh, you can teach that. You can coach that. How much coaching are you supposed to do in the NFL level? You're supposed to be relatively a polished product. You should relatively, you know, mostly know how to play the game of football. They're teaching you certain things. They're tweaking things. They've got to say, hey, Patrick, forget everything you've ever been taught about how to throw a ball. I want to just hear, I'm going to hit you in the head with this baseball bat. It's going to knock out everything you ever remember of throwing a football. And we're going to start from square one. We're going to delete everything in your head about throwing a football and teach you from the ground up. You want to trade up to get that guy? You want to take him at 12? You want to take the guy at 33? 33 is a valuable pick. You want to take it on a quarterback that you have to teach how to properly throw a football. But we shut off the film when he threw a ball left-handed because I was done.
Two plays before that, he did the Brandon Whedon flip, and then he threw the ball left-handed.
I saw the Whedon flip, and I saw a left-handed throw. There's a problem here. There's red flags here. Take him in the third round. Take him in the fourth round. Teach him how to play football for 3 years. Kizer. Here's the thing. Kizer can throw a football. Kizer might be able to throw a football through a wall. I mean, Kaiser's got an arm, and he's got all the physical skills you want someone to have to play quarterback in the NFL. He locks onto a wide receiver, and he follows his wide receiver until his wide receiver is open, or he gets sacked, or he runs out of the pocket. He's not reading a defense out. He's not figuring out that my guy's going to be open in 2 seconds if I throw the ball now. He's not progressing. As I said, I don't think I saw him get to his second progression at all last year one time. I know that's an exaggeration. I know it happened. Don't point out where he did. But you can teach that. Not really. Reading a defense is about how fast you can intuitively process information. Some people can be very, very, very smart, but it takes them a second or two to recognize different pieces of information and put the picture together. They're still smart, but they can't do that very quickly. Other people are drooling morons and can recognize four things happening at one time and know what they're supposed to do intuitively. And those guys can't spell cat if you spotted them the C and the T, okay? Kizer doesn't seem to be able to quickly process information, intuitively go where the ball is. He locks onto one wide receiver, throws it to him when he's open. You want to try to teach someone that at the NFL level? You can teach guys things at the NFL level. These are major fundamental things in Mahomes throwing the football correctly mechanically and Kizer understanding where to go and intuitively read a defense that you've got to teach these guys at the NFL level. No, thank you. I don't want to play that game anymore. Give me someone who largely looks like they know how to play the position and then will tweak the things they need to learn.
So for those of you out there who, on my side of things, have never heard Scott rant before or haven't heard him rant recently, I want to clear a couple things up here. Scott's not saying that Patrick Mahomes or Kizer are going to last to the third or fourth round.
No, not at all.
He's saying that from his point of view, he could not personally draft them as the future of the Browns organization any earlier than that, which is it's eerily similar to what I was kind of saying a few years ago about Johnny Manziel. Once again, not comparing either of these young men to Johnny Manziel, but it's the same thing. He's viewing these guys as somebody that is going to need an extended period of time of learning and teaching. And like I go back to that special attention part about Mahomes. It's so you have that whole thing going on there. And it reminds me of just that's why it reminds him a little bit of the Johnny Manziel thing and why he's saying that it could not, you know, they could go a little bit later. So going back
to
that.
No, they're not lasting to the third or fourth round. If anybody thinks
I was
saying that.
Go later on your board.
No.
Yeah, not on your board.
I wouldn't, and I'm weird with quarterbacks, and a lot of people never agree with my ratings on quarterbacks or where I think quarterbacks should be drafted.
Because nobody runs an I formation offense anymore.
Yeah, well, I am looking for the I formation 3 yards in a cloud of dust, some play action out of that, you know. But no, they'll both be gone in the first round. They may last early second, but neither of them are going to be there much past 33. Kizer won't be there in the second round. With his skill set and his ability?
I think it's the opposite. For me, it's 100% the opposite. I think Mahomes is gone in the first round. I think Kizer has the better chance of the two to be around in the second round. And maybe it's in part because his college head coach is an absolute prick and is telling everybody that this kid should have stayed in school for another year. He doesn't have his back. I mean, whether that's right or wrong, you don't say that in public.
No.
And some NFL people could be taking notice and letting Kizer. And like you said, you saw a lot of passes this year where he wasn't going through progressions. Whereas I mentioned to you that his 15 tape was way better than his 16 tape. So for me, it's the opposite. I think Kizer could last around two. I don't think Mahomes will.
Regardless, they won't be there in the third round. Like I just said, I didn't want either of them in the first two rounds because I just think there's too much you're teaching them to spend that much on them.
So I'm going to take a stand with that number 12 overall pick and what I would throw a TV through a wall. And I'm going to hear a lot of backlash about this because people absolutely love this kid. And if the Browns take him at 12, I will likely lose my mind. And that's O.J. Howard, the tight end out of Alabama. And it's not because O.J. Howard isn't a good player. It's not because O.J. Howard didn't show off the skills to be a dynamic part of your offense. For me, it's about opportunity cost. I like O.J. Howard, the player. I think he could do great things in your offense. But with how great this draft is and how stacked it is up top, I cannot justify taking a tight end at number 12 with, and I know this runs opposite of what you were saying, with the impact players in the secondary that are available. With the impact players, and this one will go with you, if a Watson or a Trubisky were there. And I know a lot of you, and even Jared out there, is probably turning over listening to this right now, because I said Deshaun Watson at 12 when I haven't been very big on Watson. But I cannot just let positions and I'm normally not a position person, but I cannot let positions like that go by where you need help to take a tight end. And I think that, and anybody who listens to this heard me last week talk about why we needed a tight end. I wrote an article for the CLE for me about why the Browns will take a tight end this year. I just don't think first round number 12 overall is where it's at. So Steven, for me, I'm throwing a TV through the wall if they take OJ Howard.
You know, I'd be pretty angry if you took a tight end at 12 too, because let's put Gronk on the Browns last year. How many more games did the Browns win with a healthy Gronk at tight end?
Add something to that. Gronk wasn't even a first-round pick.
Right. Maybe, what, is that a game? Maybe two? Maybe the Browns eke out a game or two if they had Gronk? Maybe?
Yeah, I mean, a Gronk, he opens up, you know, cover. He opens up opportunities for other guys like Corey Coleman and Terrell Pryor last year. So maybe you sneak behind, you know, because you had the safety had to, couldn't get come in the box. He had to stay back and cover him, so I mean,
and yeah, that's if you're adding the best tight end in the game.
I mean, hell, how about this? The Patriots won the Super Bowl without Rob Gronkowski. And that's because they have probably the greatest quarterback of all time. That's a different debate for a different day.
If the Browns draft a tight end at 12, every single fan should shut the draft off, burn their season tickets, burn every single piece of memorabilia they have, and never watch another game again.
But they won't, because I know you've been, you're in the sports loop, but you're not as into the sports loop as you usually are this time of year. I'm not as into the draft loop as I usually am, but I've seen people openly out there advocating for taking O.J. Howard at 12.
You're insane.
And it's,
you're absolutely insane.
And I mean, I'm looking at Dane Brugler's big board, and if it hasn't been updated on CBS, and he has him as the number 6 overall prospect. So people are going to look at this and go, wow, you guys are telling me I shouldn't take a guy at 12 that these guys have as a top 5, top 6 prospect on some of their boards. I couldn't do it. That's my TV through the wall moment.
No, it's opportunity cost. It's what you need. And so I'm going to derail this again because it's what I do. So
I thought I was talking defense and draft process on the defense side of ball. So if you tuned in today for that, you're going to probably hear a little bit, but we're probably going to talk offense and just talk team overall. So
no, this is more, I think we're scrapping other segments of this show because we're 40 minutes in and this may just be completely about the Browns today, and that's just fine. You said I was out of the sports loop as much as I usually am, and you're correct, because I can't do any more Browns draft talk nonstop like we do, okay? So I'm following the draft from a little bit of a distance. I'm you know, trying to see what the Browns may do, key positions, but I can't fall into this mass delusion and hysteria and this lying to ourselves that the Browns are going to reach into a pouch and pull out some magic beans and sprinkle them on the ground and come up with players that are going to make this team 12-4 next year. And I got to listen to the Hiramites out there tell me that we're two players away from being awesome. This team was, as I said, one mailed-in game away from being in the conversation of the worst team in NFL history. Now it's just in a conversation of the 5 worst teams in NFL history. And that's what you're working with right now. And if that sounds insulting to the Browns, it is. And it's supposed to be, because it's not a good football team. It's nowhere near being a good football team. There were times in the past when the team won 7 games. You know, the Hoyer-Manziel year a couple years ago where they went 7-9, where you could legitimately talk in the offseason about what you might do and add to make this a playoff team. This team is so much closer to an expansion team right now than it is a playoff team. It's worse than the expansion team was almost last year. I think the 99 expansion team would have beat the Browns last year.
Let's not go that far.
I'll go that far. It's one of the worst teams in NFL history that we saw last year. One of the worst defenses you will ever see. And so we're going nuts about the draft, and everyone is going to go nuts about the draft, and this is breaking rule of podcasting, insulting the people listening to you, but we need to tone it down in Cleveland about, this is our Super Bowl. Jesus Christ. Listen, if you get three players out of this draft, three who contribute, be happy. I know that sounds insane. I know that sounds absurd, but we think every single year that we're going to pull out some silver magic bullet and solve every problem in the draft. Can we be realistic about it? Can we be realistic about where this team is? So if you nail this draft and you get six players out of this draft, you're still 3 years away from being good. It's 2019 before you can think about this team being 500. And if that happens in 2018 and they go 500, Hugh Jackson is a god among men as a coach. It shouldn't happen. This team was a full teardown. They went beyond a full teardown and got rid of people they probably should have kept. And people said, you might have overdone some of this, tearing this team down to the most basic level. And you fumbled last year, to be honest, in the rebuild. What did you really get out of last year's draft that you feel really good about going forward?
For me, I feel really good about Emmanuel Ogba. Okay. Especially yes. As the season went on. I think Carl Nassib, who showed some things before he hurt himself, and then when he came back, he wasn't himself. I said when they drafted him, I love this kid at Penn State, but he's got the big body, the big frame. But I said he needs a year in the weight room on the J.J. Watt diet and on the J.J. Watt working out to really get into his frame. So I do like what they have in Nassib. I want to see more. I liked what I saw out of Corey Coleman pre-hand injury. I know that you're big on the routes that he can run, but I do like some of the things that he did last
year. Corey Coleman looked like he could be an NFL player. I didn't see anything that made me go, hey, there's a future number one. There's Antonio Brown running around. You know, I didn't see that.
You wouldn't have said the same thing after watching Antonio Brown
probably
play football
not.
The first year either.
Probably not. But I'm saying,
and I'm not making an excuse. I'm just saying
Emmanuel
Ogba,
I agree. Aside from Emmanuel Ogba, I'm not sure what you got out of last year's draft that is a big piece on a playoff team. So now you did a full teardown. You had that draft. You're hoping to build in this draft. You added some pieces in free agency. It's hard to get caught up in the draft hysteria when, in my mind, it's 2019 at the earliest that we can start thinking this is a playoff team.
So it's really weird because I agree with you to an extent about it's not going to be this year. I think 2018, I'm not going to call them a playoff team, but I think 2018, they could approach the 7-8 and maybe depending on if they hit. The biggest thing here, and it's always going to be the biggest thing, is if you hit on the quarterback. Because I was thinking about this when I was driving over here, and I go back to the Cowboys last year. Okay, and everybody will, they had Tony Romo pre-injury. That was a really, really good football team. But I think about where the Cowboys are, say, they had the great offensive line. The Cowboys literally plug and played a mid-round quarterback and a rookie running back and went what? It was 15-1, right? What was their overall? I think it was it 14-2,
I think.
14-2. They won 14 football games with a rookie quarterback, a rookie running back, Dez Bryant hurt. So they just had trash at wide receiver. Just trash at wide receiver outside of Dez Bryant, and they had the best offensive line in football. Their defense, if you talk to Cowboys fans will tell you that their defense was awful. They need a pass rusher. Sean Lee, finally, I think he actually played a full season, or he came close to playing a full season. They had injuries. They had inconsistent play. A team like that, that could have probably just as easily, if they did not have Dak Prescott do what Dak Prescott did last year, could have just as easily been 5-11, 4-12, because they got the quarterback, because they got a stud playmaker in Ezekiel Elliott, they did a complete flip. And granted, their division wasn't the greatest. They did a complete flip. So for me, I look at what the Browns have done. And I'm not out here saying the Browns are going to win 15 football games or 14 football games or even 10 football games this year. So please just stay with me before you turn us off and say I'm an idiot and a homer. But I look at what the Browns did on the offensive line. You got one of the best left tackles in football in Joe Thomas. I say one of because he is getting older. You went out and you got Petonio coming back. You paid him the big dollars. If Treader can come back from the knee injury, he's a very good center. You gave Kevin Zeitler, the best guard in the NFL, the money you needed to get him here. You got a question mark at right tackle between Cam Irving, Sean Coleman, or anybody else they bring in. But four out of your five offensive line is going to make you one of the best offensive lines in football. You have two very good running back pieces. I love Isaiah Crowell. People argue with me all the time. I love Isaiah Crowell.
You're slowly converting me on Isaiah Crowell.
I mean, the guy averaged 4.8 yards per carry behind one of the worst offensive lines in the league last year. You have Duke Johnson, change of pace, can split out wide. You could throw him passes. So I think you're good there. You have Corey Coleman. You brought in Kenny Britt. Kenny Britt is underrated. People do not get it. I brought up Kenny Britt, and ever since, you know, early on in his career, we had the troubles. I brought up the list of quarterbacks that Kenny Britt has caught passes from in his career. If he played his entire career for the Cleveland Browns, we would think he is a godsend for even being able to put up numbers at all. I mean, the guy put up 1,000 yards last year with worse quarterbacks, and this is coming from somebody who really liked Jared Goff but thought he should sit for a full year. Worse quarterbacks than the Cleveland Browns put on the field last year and had 1,000 yards receiving. So you're talking about, you have Coleman and Britt. You have a bunch of young guys that you're trying to develop. So for me, on the offensive side of the ball, it's like, I'm not saying they're the Cowboys, but I'm saying if you find that quarterback, if you could put a quarterback behind that offensive line with a couple of playmakers, because, I mean, the Cowboys didn't have any more playmakers when they went into that draft than the Browns did. Dez Bryant was coming off of that foot injury.
Well,
so they had Dez Bryant. So that's more playmakers than the Browns.
Yeah,
but I'm saying as their team as a whole.
Dez Bryant is a big piece.
Yeah, but he's been in and out.
And to be fair, Ezekiel Elliott is the next coming of Adrian Peterson.
Right,
I know they got him out of the
draft.
They got him out of the draft. But are you going to find an Ezekiel Elliott in this? And that's what you got to find. You'd have to hit. And well, Zeke is very key to this. As you said, what might have been a godsend to the Cowboys and a tragedy to Tony Romo was Tony Romo's injury and Dez Bryant's, because it forced them to apply that 3 yards in the cloud of dust strategy that I like, and that helps your defense as well, because it's off the field, it limits the amount of time the opportunities the other offense has with the ball. And I think a lot of that, there was a lot of stylistic advantages to what the Cowboys were forced to do because of the personnel they had at that point. Maybe that team doesn't go 14-2 with Tony Romo just because the defense is on the field more, mindsets are different, and sometimes scoring more points, absurd as this sounds, anti-Pat Shermer, sometimes a more prolific offense isn't better for your team because you're wearing out your defense and you're losing games 35-31 instead of winning games 24-12 because your defense is fresh the whole game. But I agree with you that the offense is not the major concern on the Browns. As I said, it's that historically bad, one of the worst defenses ever. Is the big issue, is the elephant in the room, and how do you fix that? And I don't know what you think you have going forward on this defense. Collins? Maybe Shelton, but you don't know. Kirksey? I don't know what Christian Kirksey is. I think he might be a good player someday. I think he might be a good player at times. I don't know. I don't know if he's just one of these guys that looks good in the Cleveland Browns, so we hope he's good, or if he's actually good, and time will tell. I don't know what Ogbo was. Because at times he looked like he's going to be a very good player. And at times he looked like he could become, you know, the next version of, I don't want to say Mingo because he did more than Mingo ever did. But I don't know. Could it be the next Cameron Wimbley where he has a decent career but he's not dominant and great?
So do you see what I just did to you, right? I made you go from, you still think that the Browns should go offense on 12. But I just made you realize that the whole defense is where we need to focus.
I've always
our first
said,
picks.
If you well, when we replay this podcast, go ahead and listen, because I said 12 might be the only place they go offense in the first 3 or 4 rounds that they take picks.
Right, but
it is the defense. I've never disagreed with you on that.
So here's where I'm getting at, and this is why I wanted to do this here. So when you talk about that, you talked about last year and they didn't get anything out of it that you really see stands out. But this draft class at 12. You have the opportunity where you can get that stud corner to replace Hayden. Maybe if you can get lucky and a Malik Hooker can fall, or you can move up a few picks to get him if you're into that type of thing.
Boy, could you imagine? People go nuts.
It would be...
You move up to get a safety, but it's a Buckeye.
Yes. There. If the Browns traded up for any other position, any other player in the draft that was not a quarterback, the Twitter would burn. But the minute they see Malik Hooker, Ohio State, everything would be okay. They would be, whatever the cost was, it would be okay. So I guess what I'm getting at here, and my point is that, well, I'm making 2 points. So one, I don't think the offense is as bad if you can find the guy at quarterback. I don't think the offense as a core is as bad as people make it out to be, but you need the quarterback. It all starts with the quarterback. But on the defensive side of the ball, this is why I would be absolutely fine, and a lot of people will probably, because it's not sexy, I'd be fine if they took defense with their first four picks. And that's, we're talking 1, 12, 33, and 52. If they will go Myles Garrett. If they went Myles Garrett, best defensive back, linebacker, best defensive back again, or, you know, some combination of that in the first four, I would never be mad, and you would never see one complaint out of me. Nope. Because like you just said, you don't know what you have out of, you know, I think that they have something out of Ogba. But when you look at the rest, Hayden, Taylor, Ibrahim Campbell, Derek Kindred.
Well, hold on. The back end. Okay. I got to do the Joe Hayden apologist role here.
I don't hate Hayden.
I will never tell you that Joe Hayden is an elite NFL cornerback, because he's not, and that's part of the problem with the whole Joe Hayden discussion, is someone said he's elite, Joe Hayden said he's elite, and Joe Hayden's not elite. He's not one of the three or four best corners in the league. He is, though, one of the better second-tier cornerbacks in the league, and he's cornerback number one on half the teams in the league. On the Cleveland Browns, a team completely devoid of talent at most positions for a very, very, very long time, it is absurd the amount of hate that Joe Hayden gets. If I run through a list of problems on the Browns, I got to get through like 49 other players out of 52 before I get to Joe Hayden being the problem. So I just got to leave that there. Joe Hayden is one of the things on defense that, one of the players on defense who I know is a piece of a playoff team. Joe Hayden can play on a playoff team. There's playoff teams that would like to have Joe Hayden on their defense. I can't say that about Nate Orchard. I don't think there's a playoff team banging down the door to get Nate Orchard to come start in their defense. Sorry if anyone knows Nate personally. It's just the first name that came to my head.
No, and Nate was a guy. I mean, I know. I get what you're saying. So that's why I'm kind of leaning toward, and that's why maybe I'll do a separate podcast and actually get back and talk about some draft prospects on the defensive side of the ball. But I think that the Browns
Bob's listeners.
It's all good, guys. But I think the Browns could go really heavy on defense with their first four picks, and I would not be mad at all. And I just think it's about exactly what you said. You talk about Super Bowl contenders out there and how they have multiple players through a few years of drafts that really stand out and play key positions on their defense. And we need to find those guys. And this is a draft that everybody's saying that you could get guys of that caliber, Pro Bowl caliber players, into the end of the third round. And you have five picks in the first 65 picks in the draft. I mean, if you take all defense, I'm never gonna complain.
You know, if they didn't take an offensive player in the entire draft, I don't think I'd be angry.
Because and that's assuming the quarterback that we like doesn't fall to 12.
And yes, because I do believe that Mitch Trubisky is a franchise quarterback in the NFL. I think that the worst you're going to get out of Mitch Trubisky is an analog to a Matt Stafford. And that's the worst. I think that's his absolute floor. I think that's how good he is. And Bob, you know me. You've known each other for a couple of years now. I do not go crazy about quarterbacks. I'm usually very lukewarm right now. And I usually do not really throw something out there on a college quarterback and say, I think this kid has, I think that you could, his ceiling is being one of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL, I think.
If Mitch Trubisky was born in North Dakota, would you feel this way?
Yes.
Just checking.
Yes, I could care less. I'm looking for a couple of things when I watch a quarterback play. Because to me, the most important thing about a quarterback is he makes plays by throwing the football. And as Pat Shurmur-esque as that sounds, I'm watching to see how quickly he reads the defense, how quickly he gets rid of the ball. Is he making progressions in college? Do I have to teach him this stuff at the next level? Now, a lot of those reads are supposedly called in from the sideline for him pre-snap. But the bottom line is the kid intuitively knows where to throw the football. He's not afraid to throw the football, and he has all the skills you need. All this said, as much as I like Mitch Trubisky, I like Mitch Trubisky more than about any quarterback I've liked in the last 5 years. That being said, if he fell to 12 and the Browns passed on him to go defense and they went straight defense throughout the draft, I'm fine with that, because the defense is the problem on this team and the offense is closer to being okay than a lot of fans will give it credit for, especially with that offensive line. That offensive line should do a ton for this offense next year with anyone who's remotely competent under center. The problem is, can you fix this defense in one offseason? And the answer is, I don't think the answer is yes. That's why I said it's 2019 instead of 2022. because I think the defense is what you have to fix. I think the offense is about is close enough to there that you can really focus on fixing this defense at the moment, especially with what you did on the line.
So my last question, I don't think we should talk Browns too much more, but my last question about
I think
the
this
Browns,
is going to be the last question for the podcast, because we're at about 55 minutes, our listeners sticking with us much longer is going to be asking a lot, because a podcast goes much longer than 60 or 65 is a chore.
Well, I will throw this out there. The Cavs just got spanked by Atlanta. That's depressing. But my final question is this, because I want to go back to 12 and where you said that you would be okay with that spot for offense. If it wasn't a quarterback, would you be okay with wide receiver? Is part A. And I don't know how much you've looked at the wide receivers. Is there one wide receiver there that you might be interested in?
The answer to the question is no, I'm not okay with wide receiver. So I'll skip the second part of the question. The 12 spot should be a quarterback, or you should be addressing a need on defense at 12.
Okay.
If you're not taking a quarterback with the off pick in the first round that you're probably going to package one of your second round picks to trade up with, you should be going heavy defense in this draft. If you don't, the only thing you should take other than a defensive player in the first round is if you can get a quarterback at 12. And if that quarterback is named Trubisky or Watson, if it's Kaiser or Mahomes and you're spending a first round pick on them, no, you should be spending it on a defensive need.
The reason I bring this up is I talked about it a little bit last week. Wide receiver is a position that I think is going under the radar as a target for the Browns at 12. And the reason being is I go back to last year and I think of when they let Travis Benjamin walk in free agency and the money that he got, and then they turned and they put it into Corey Coleman and all those wide receivers in the draft. So to me, it seems like they, and the Terrell Pryor stuff broke down in a way that they didn't want it to break down in, but they're okay with letting Pryor walk because they say, all right, we taught Terrell Pryor how to do that in one offseason. What could we do with a more polished guy? So that's what I talked about. I read this week, the Browns have been linked up and down to Corey Davis, the kid from Western Michigan. 6'3", 220, I think, 215. So a big-bodied kid. I know that I believe Jason Snyder, who's probably listening to this at some point, really, really likes him. He's a kid that they've been tied to, like really strong ties to coming out of Berea. Rumors are saying that they really like him. If he fell to 12 and the quarterback that you like wasn't there, and I know you said defense, would you absolutely hate wide receiver at 12?
No, I don't hate it. I think if you're addressing needs right now, especially with the fact that I think with this offensive line, you could be a run heavy offense, and that you could move the ball that way, and that it might be the better way to go, especially if you don't get a quarterback at 12 and you're trotting Commander Cody out there to execute Order 66 and kill the season again, then I think you want to go run heavy. And I just think the pick is better spent fixing all the gaps that you've talked about on defense, and that you want to do another podcast to talk about more because I kept derailing it away. I don't hate it. It's always a need. You can never have too many wide receivers. I mean, unless you've got four Julio Joneses, go ahead and try to find a wide receiver. You know, that's obviously an exaggeration, but the Browns do need a wide receiver, because I think you can pick up through the podcast, and I'm not sold on Coleman. Is he anything more than potentially a two? I haven't seen anything that tells me he's a one in this league yet. And Kenny Britt is Kenny Britt. So, I mean, yeah, you need a wide receiver. It's a need. So if you addressed it, can I scream? No. I can't throw my TV through the wall. I can't burn my season tickets that I don't have. And all my Browns gear, like if they took a tight end at 12. But no, I'm with you on this one, Bob. It's defense. And if you're really looking at what the Browns need to do to be competitive as quickly as possible before that 2019 year I keep throwing out, then you better go heavy on the defense, because that's where the problem is. Say it one more time, broken record, take a shot every time I say it, and you're drunk 30 minutes into the podcast. It's a historically bad defense, one of the worst defenses the National Football League has ever seen, and you've got 2 to 3 seasons of work on that defense to get it where it needs to be.
All right, well, since you said we're not going to be doing the Trump talk because we're already reaching the end of the podcast, I want to take this time to say thank you for, you know, coming on with me, making this not so boring with me sitting in my bedroom recording this at my apartment. I want to apologize to your listeners because all we did was talk Browns and Cleveland sports, and we didn't even get to the Trump talk and the spirits and society part
of your, think my listeners podcast. Are fine with that. You know, they might want a break from me rambling on about how much I don't like Donald Trump. So that's probably good. Bob, I want to say thank you for coming out and doing this crossover podcast here. I want to say to everyone listening that I do believe that this was just a warm-up to getting the whole band back together. And Jason Snyder, TJ Hill, Bob, myself, we're talking about doing a show pre-draft, probably next week, recording a podcast where we get the whole No Static Radio crew back together one more time to talk about the NFL draft.
I don't think that's going to be an hour.
No, that's going to be like two, maybe more. Maybe we'll see how that might be one of those 3-hour shows that we used to do. You might see a comeback from Dick Banger and State Trivia. And there might be a few MKDT references thrown around out there, which I'm not going to explain what that is at this moment. You can go dig around Twitter accounts and figure out what that is because I don't want to be sued. And is that about it? Is that about to take us out?
Sorry, I literally just found out what that meant a few days ago when Jason explained it to somebody on Twitter. So that's funny. Poor MKDT. But yeah, so raving lunatic media people, thanks for listening to me. I really appreciate it. Cleveland Sports Zone people, thanks for sticking it out here and listening to Scott and I ramble about the Browns. Until next time, we will talk to you later.
Oh, you do the music afterwards?
Yeah, I added all afterwards.
I can take all of this out too. Well, we're taking this out because it's just us talking into the mic like idiots.
Absolutely.
It may be the show ender that I do that I put at the end of everything.
All right. Ready to go ahead and get started?